Hello and welcome to the podcast from the Foundation for Science and Technology. This week, we're discussing the Diamond Light Source, the UK's flagship synchrotron facility based on the Harwell Science and Innovation Campus in Oxfordshire. Diamond's first user beams were in 2007. An agreement has recently been reached for the Diamond 2 upgrade. With me to discuss all things Diamond is Professor Jean-Louis Botton, Chief Executive Officer of the Diamond Light Source. Professor Botton, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Gavin. It's a pleasure to be here.
So for those less familiar with synchrotron light sources, can you explain what a synchrotron source such as Diamond actually is and how it works?
It's a large device. It uses electrons as particles that are accelerated very, very close to the speed of light. And every time these particles go around the circle, every time you bend the trajectory of these electrons, they emit light, different energies, so from the far infrared to very hard X-rays. And then we use this light produced by these electrons to do experiments. So in a way, it's just like a huge light bulb, and you use this light emitted to do very specialized scientific experiments, imaging, spectroscopy, or doing what is called diffraction techniques, trying to find where the atoms are, which atoms we have in a sample, etc.
And this light, these sort of beam lines that come off Diamond, can be used for a vast range of different sciences and different types of sciences. What are the areas of scientific research that benefit most from synchrotron radiation facilities like Diamond?
Well, what is great about a synchrotron, it's a very multidisciplinary instrument. So you can do experiments in a very, very broad range of activities. You can use it in general in life sciences, trying to do drug discovery, vaccines, find out where atoms are in a protein structure. So very important related to life science. But also there's an area of research which is called physical sciences, and this is where scientists would use the synchrotron to discover new batteries, new photovoltaic materials, understand the failure of some components, turbine blades, or even batteries, for example. So it applies, the synchrotron can be applied to a variety of fields of science and engineering. So very fundamental, trying to understand how quantum materials would work, for example, down to very practical applications of turbine engine failures. So that's very impressive in a sense for a particular tool, a tool that is maybe expensive, but at the same time is really very impactful in many different areas.
And with all this possible research that could get done, how on earth do you decide what research to do? And I assume it's pretty competitive, right?
It's very competitive. We have thousands of researchers every year submitting proposals. They go through processes where they need to write, describe their research, what they're going to do, how they're going to do it. And then we have international reviewers who look at the proposal. They score it in terms of impact, the quality of the science, which is most important. And then we rank them. And at some point, we look at how much time is available on the instruments, and we pick the best science that is done. So that's how it's done. It's very competitive. We have many more applications for beam time. This is how you access the instrument. Much more beam time requests than what we have available. So it's very competitive. We pick the best science. Could be science from different countries or from the UK. So it really doesn't matter where it's coming from.
And just to understand the structure of Diamond, it's a very large machine. It's a big circular ring, and then the light comes off at different beam lines. And then you have different instrumentation on each of those beam lines, or is it the same? And how does that instrumentation change the kind of things that you can do?
Yes, so every time we have these beams of light coming out of around this circular storage ring, there is a different type of experiment. So we have about 34 different stations or beam lines, and everyone will actually do something slightly different. Some beam lines will be dedicated to life sciences, trying to understand the structure of proteins and molecules of life. Other beamlines will be dedicated to imaging, for example, very hard materials. Again, I picked the example of turbine blade because people would know what a turbine blade is a piece of metal, but a very, very complex piece of metal, very different alloys. And so you will have a beamline dedicated for more engineering type of science, trying to find how a turbine blade would evolve as you operate a turbine blade at very high temperatures. Other beamlines will be more dedicated to something that is called catalysis, so trying to do chemical processes that are much more effective using different type of materials for a catalyst, what I called. And we will have another beamline for that type of experiment. So you have to have a comprehensive suite of tools. Some, again, will be dedicated for life science, other more physical sciences, other will be for imaging techniques, other will be for spectroscopy techniques, trying to understand what the atoms do, what kind of environment they are, when there is a reaction that happens. You want to follow this reaction dynamically as it evolves, so you need to be fast. Some beamlines, it really doesn't matter how long the experiment can take. And so you have a really this 34 beamlines plus other microscopes that use, in that case, electrons, but that we can cover that separately. They will be really specialized, and each one will be the best tool for the type of experiment.
And those beamlines have been created over time and are pretty sophisticated in terms of the technology that you've got at the end of that light.
So Diamond was actually built over a number of years. There were three different phases, and each phase had a different set of beamline that were developed. And so each one was specialized in something different. They're all complementary. And what is very, very impressive at Diamond is each beamline is really state of the art. Even if those that have been developed in the early days, they've been kept up to date. And they are competitive with the best beamlines in the world. And what is interesting is really the technology that is being developed is not existing anywhere else. So you cannot go to a shop, a supermarket, or online and buy a component of a beamline. It's really, you need to go around the world to pick the best components. So it's something very specialized. What is I find interesting, Diamond developed its own instrument, and this is something that is unique. The best synchrotrons do that, not necessarily all the synchrotrons. And the UK is in a very good position that has a long history of technology development. And so we benefited from expertise in engineering and design, accelerator physics. So we built on expertise that was already in the country, including on campus, at the Harwell campus, including Dasbury Laboratory, where the first synchrotron in UK was established. So we build that technology, the expertise, and now we see it all being used at Diamond. And that's why it's one of the most competitive instruments in the world.
So I wanted to ask you about some of the highly skilled people in Diamonds. You've talked about that definitely the skills needed to build those beamlines. You also presumably need some pretty high skilled people to operate as beamline scientists and support other scientists who are working. Where do you get those skilled people, and do you get them sort of off a production line from universities, or is Diamond itself training a lot of people up? How does all of that work?
So there are different channels where that can be used to get the skilled workforce. So if you imagine the early days, we didn't have a trained workforce. So people came from the previous UK synchrotron from Dasbury. Some of them came there. Others came in the early days from other facilities. So you build the workforce, the expertise. In other areas, you need to build from scratch. If you build a new beamline that didn't exist anywhere else, then you have to build the expertise. Mm. What happens is often you train people through programs. For example, we have currently 120 PhD students that are trained at Diamond and do experiments on different beamlines. And what happens often, some of them move away, they go to different jobs. Other ones will remain as postdoctoral fellows, and then some of them, they might want to stay. And I think we're very fortunate to have a channel where where a pipeline where people are trained. We have apprentices as well that are trained at Diamond. And through these programs, PhD studentships, apprenticeship, we can grow the workforce that is required. Obviously, you need to pick the best talent. So when we advertise around the world, and we are able to get some of the best people around the world. In other cases, where the expertise don't exist, well, we build from scratch through these pipelines, and train technologists, engineers to do the jobs, the type of experiments they need to do to make sure Diamond is not only a very good facility for the instrument, but also the best place to do the science.
Well, let's talk about some of that science because Diamond's been operating since 2007. And obviously, over that time, thousands and thousands of experiments. So, in that kind of decade and a half, what are some of the highlights in terms of some of the discoveries that have been made, some of the science that's been completed at Diamond?
Well, in terms of output, Diamond is very productive. There have been 13,000 peer-reviewed publications coming on out of Diamond research. We also what are called protein data bank deposits. So when you discover the structure of a particular molecule, you produce you deposit that information to a data bank. So thousands of also protein data bank deposits. And through the publications and these protein data banks, there's a lot of good scientists come out. Some of the work is, for example, in the area of energy, life sciences, for example, foot and mouth disease, looking at vaccines for foot and mouth disease. We looked at the efficacy of these vaccine. In the area of, again, life sciences, we had recently a very high-profile work that was published. It was called the COVID Moonshot, and this is to develop antiviral drugs that are now going through trials. So to against COVID, there is work that is done in plastic degradation. You know, plastics are a big issue in terms of environmental impact. We produce plastic everywhere. We go to the supermarket, we buy everything, and there's a plastic component. So it's very important for environmental sustainability to understand the impact, the degradation. So researchers are, for example, working on enzymes that are going to be able to degrade this plastic in something that is not environmentally impactful. Other
And
work.
just on that, so you've got these enzymes, or you're investigating different types of enzymes. How is Diamond used to help that research? Is it to understand the structure of the enzyme, or what's going on there?
I think the structure of these enzymes, that's very important. And also looking at the degradation itself, what type of residues you would have on
Oh, I
a,
see.
right? So how these plastic evolved as they're eaten up or decomposed, looking at the durability of that. So you want a plastic that is strong enough to last while you use it, and then when you don't want to, you want to decompose it, it's going to decompose in the right type of elements. You don't want something that is going to be even more toxic. There are other areas, energy, developing longer lasting batteries that charge faster, that are more able to sustain different environmental conditions, so cold, working cold weathers or working hot weathers. So all sorts of development. Photovoltaics that don't degrade but are cheaper. So you see a lot of these silicon panels. They're obviously expensive. Ideally, what you want to produce is a photovoltaic cell you could just paint on your roof and last long enough that actually you will produce enough electricity that is worthwhile. There's no environmental impact. There's other work, for example, in the area of food security, trying to develop foods that are more sustainable, that require less energy, less water. There's climate change, and on one hand, you want to produce foods that are more sustainable, they're drought tolerant. You'll want also food that are more sustainable, maybe plant food. Right? So imagine there are actually researchers who want to develop artificial meats that taste as good as regular meat, but doesn't have the environmental impact. So we do a lot of the research in those areas. People don't necessarily associate a synchrotron to areas that are very impactful every day, but in reality, it's not just the physicists or the chemists that use synchrotron. It's people that develop food, people that want to develop more efficient catalyst to reduce the carbon emission in energy production and so on. So, for example, electronic components, you heard about maybe quantum computers, right? So these are big thing. Artificial intelligence, you need to have more powerful computers. And all these big technologies require materials that operate in different conditions. They will have properties that don't exist in nature. So developing new materials that can be applied in many different areas. So it's really very impressive in terms of impact of the facility and
I
the
mean,
science.
that's just a huge range of sciences. And as you were saying, some of them are not the ones that you might immediately think of when thinking about synchrotron. So I wanted to ask you, you're about to upgrade Diamond. So tell me a little bit about that. What's the thinking behind the upgrade? And what are you going to do? How long is it going to take?
Well, the upgrade is, the goal is really to be maintaining Diamond as one of the very best facilities worldwide. And we know there's new technology that has been developed, and we need to adopt this technology, develop our own version of this technology so that we maintain Diamond very competitive by world standards. And we're going to adopt this technology to make Diamond a more brilliant source. So imagine light again, the analogy is trying to have much brighter light so we can see more the details of matter. So X-rays, they would be much more intense, also infrared radiation. So everything would be more intense so we can see better in better details or in faster details the structural materials. For example, an analogy that I'd like to make is you probably heard about the James Webb Telescope, the Hubble Telescope. The improvement in resolution that they brought by changing their technology. So it will be similar. The upgrade of Diamond will be a step change in terms of the resolution, so we can see more details. We can do experiments much faster. So imagine a reaction that happens to transform carbon dioxide in something that we can use, and that's not going to be impactful for the environment. So you want to follow reactions much faster. And the fact we will have a much brighter source will enable us to follow reactions much faster time scales. So a few seconds instead of waiting for an experiment to happen maybe over a few minutes or hours, you'll be able to follow reaction within a fraction of a second. And that's very important to understand how these materials evolve, what type of catalyst we need to develop to have these reactions work in a much more efficient way, using less energy, producing greater fraction of material that you want that are less detrimental to the environment. So it's a big change. And what do we need to do? Essentially, remember we talked about this storage ring, this circular instrument. We need to replace all of it to have a technology that focuses the electrons beam that travels through this big instrument, focus it much smaller to smaller much smaller size. So we have more electrons in a small area, so we can have sources of light that is much smaller. And that's very important to produce, this more bright source, but also what is called coherence. So, the electrons that will come, the photons that will come out of this storage ring will be having the same type of information coming out. So, what is called coherence, same wavefront. And that will help us improve the imaging resolution in a much more significant way, going beyond what is expected from a regular source that is not coherent.
So the primary part of this is changing the storage ring and what comes out of it. Is there also a subsequent need to change the beam lines in order to be able to cope with this new
Yes.
things?
So
Yeah.
there will be different upgrades. The obvious one is yes, you need to have a new instrument that will be able to cope with this increased brilliance. Instrument that will take advantage of this brilliance need to be faster, faster response, faster detector. And you also need to think of new experiments to take advantage of these new features of light. So we will develop actually three new beam lines in the first instance, and eventually down the line, we hope to have even more instruments. But you need to think new experiments that you can do with these new capabilities. So you have to redesign totally new beam line. So you totally you remove one beam line, then you build a new one to take advantage of these new capabilities. So that's significant efforts, not just only on the storage ring, but also all sorts of other things like instrument, but also software to take advantage of new technologies. I think Diamond is also a leader in that area. I was recently at a conference, and it was very clear that Diamond is ahead of the game in terms of software development. Because if you think you have new detectors, new type of experiments, what are you going to do? You're going to use the old software? No, I think you need to rethink everything. And Diamond has an entire group of people, one of the pillars of this upgrade, that is focused on software development, so that eventually, and we're already doing some of this work, is we take advantage of AI, right? It's a big thing, AI now. We use, or it's been used in different aspects of our lives. But to take advantage to the fullest of this upgrade, we also need to embrace AI, machine learning techniques, so that we can do smarter experiments. I have this picture. I really want Diamond to be not only one of the very best facilities for the technology, the science people, but also in terms of using the data that we develop. So it's the smartest synchrotron facility, the smartest users that take advantage of this technology.
And in terms of timing of this upgrade, and I guess the cost also is quite interesting. I mean, how does this pan out? Presumably it's a several year project.
Yes, it's a several-year project, and it started several years ago, well before I started at Diamond. There are people that have been here and worked for the Diamond project at least maybe for 10 years, if not more. So in a way, I'm fortunate to come at a time where the project is funded, but it's a long-term project. And from this point on, so what is called the dark period, so we're going to shut the light down, so we're going to dismantle the storage ring, start rebuilding the beam lines. Already we already started building some beam lines in the areas that are there where there is space. So the shutdown, or the dark period, will start in December 2027. It seems a long time away, but it's coming, will be coming soon. And this dark period will last about 18 months. Over that period, we'll basically re take the entire storage ring away. We'll be installing the component that will have been built from now to that time. We already started procurement of some components. And then we'll start injecting electrons. It will take some time to ramp up, and eventually the machine will be available for user sometime in 2030. It sounds a long time away, but time moves on, and we want to start as soon as possible because we know the budget is limited, and we want to do this on time and on budget, obviously.
Absolutely. And compared with a Particle physics experiment. This is pretty fast. That's all I can say. So these
It's
things
very,
are, yeah.
that's right. It's very fast. It's a large scale experiment, maybe not as some of the very big particle accelerators that are several kilometers long, but certainly in terms of complexity, it's not a small project. It's very exciting, like all big projects. And I think what we're focusing really is on delivering not just the machine, but also the science that we can do with it.
Well, just to finish off, because we're coming towards the end of our time, but let's transport ourselves to 2030 or just a little bit beyond. What is the kind of exciting science that the upgraded diamond could really start delivering on? Give us a flavor of some of the things it could do.
I think some of the experiments is really looking at reactions, trying to follow reactions in a much better way. So trying to understand what is the dynamic of reaction. It's very important because if you want to imagine, if you want to develop a new catalyst, and it needs to be efficient, it needs to be renewable. So the experiments that we could not do before follow this type of reaction in a much faster time frame, millisecond time type of resolution. Other experiments is imaging, looking at more details. I know some facilities have already started. There's the European Synchrotron facility in France that has started experiment trying to understand the human atlas, so the body, internal body, and try to see more details. So we'll be able to do experiments we cannot do today, seeing more details of what is there, right? What things that we don't even know that exist, we'll be able to actually discover them. And this is the impact of an instrument revolution, is discover new things that eventually will have to be explained. We see more details, we'll be able to ask the question, what does this mean? And we have no idea today. I think the most interesting experiments were probably the ones we're not even thinking about today.
Yeah, for
And
sure.
again, I was at a conference last week, and the discussion was, well, I think it's difficult to predict what type of experiments you really do. The one that might be the most impactful, you haven't been able to think about it because you have no idea what you can do, right? But we know the direction. We know it will be much more better resolution, but much better time resolution. But in reality, there may be experiments that people have not been thinking today that will be possible eventually down the line. So I think that's also a very exciting part, not knowing necessarily what the best thing that will come.
But it's very exciting. Well, listen, we've come to the end of our time, but we wish you all the best for this major upgrade to Diamond and all the exciting science that's going to come out of that. But for now, Professor Baton, thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much, Gavin. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the podcast from the Foundation for Science and Technology. My guest this week was Professor Joan-Lieve Botton, Chief Executive Officer of Diamond Light Source. You can find further information about the Foundation for Science and Technology on our website at www.foundation.org.uk. There you'll find details of all our events, our journal, our Future Leaders programme, and all previous editions of this podcast. Until the next time, goodbye.